Welcome to In the News, Conversations Around Security, a new and dynamic podcast where we dissect the day's headlines through the critical lens of security risk management and where awareness meets analysis. Join us on the 1st and 15th of each month as we bring you a fresh episode packed with informative debates, expert analysis, and thought-provoking insights offering a nuanced perspective on the stories that shape our world. So buckle up and join us for a look at what's in the news, Conversations Around Security. Hello, folks, and welcome to In the News, Conversations Around Security. I'm your host, Luciano Cedroni, with me, Brian Clayman, and we have a very special guest, longtime industry veteran, and currently the VP over at Regal Security, also the chair and founder of the Security Guard Association of Ontario. Jeez, that's a mouthful. Paul Carson. So for those of you who aren't aware of Paul's background, he has been in the industry a very long time. Almost as long as Brian, both stalwarts of the industry in the Toronto area. So I'm really excited about today's conversation. We're going to be talking about the state of the security guard industry. I know Brian and I have gotten into it a few times in the past, but I think today's will be extra special because, I know these two gentlemen, and I know Paul really has a passion for the contract guard side of the business. Brian certainly sits on the other side of the fence often, working with the client. So his responsibility, his approach is a little different. And at times there's a reason for tension there, but there's also a reason to work together. And I think we're going to see some of those differences through today's discussion when we talk about how we fix this industry we call security. But before we get into that, Brian, pass it over to you to say hello and say a few words.
Thanks, Luke. And welcome, Paul. It's great to have you. This is a story that's been in the news a lot recently, what's happening to security guards across Canada.
Police are investigating after a security guard was stabbed in the downtown core late this morning.
The fun and games at the Pickering Casino Resort came to a violent end Monday after an employee was shot dead.
The security guard was working. He was doing his job when he was involved with these individuals who in turn shot and killed him.
Police say 34-year-old Michael Ferdinand was found with multiple gunshot wounds after shots rang out around 5 a.m.
You know, I remember when I started off a long time ago, I worked as a security guard when I was going to school a million years ago. And back then, life was really, really simple. You just sat there at a desk, you said hello, and life was good. And when I look at the things that are happening nowadays in the last couple of years to security guards, you just got to shake your head. I mean, people never thought that the industry had the element of danger and unpredictability that it has. So I'm looking forward to talking with Paul. Known Paul for a long time, and he truly is an industry veteran and someone passionate about the rights of security guards and doing it right. So thanks, Paul, for joining us.
Thanks, Brian, for having me. You and Luciano as well.
All right, well then let's get into it. Paul, I think the best way to approach this is to get your sense of what the security guard industry is going through right now. To Brian's point, we haven't seen as many injuries, certainly as many deaths as we have in the last few years, unfortunately. So let's open it up with that.
I'm not sure that statement is accurate. We're not seeing as much. I just think that we didn't know. And I think that we were blind to that, either on purpose or we relied on our ministry to educate us, and that really wasn't going on. So we started educating ourselves. The SJAO was formed October 9th, after Michael Ferdinand was killed in at the casino in Pickering. That portion of, or that element of security, is not covered under the ministry. We pointed that out during a news release, and then got a very angry letter retort back from the media communications people over at the AGCO, saying that I was factually incorrect, that we should direct all of our issues around credentialing and training back to the Ministry of Solicitor General, which I did. And then Solicitor General basically asked me, basically told me, it's the AGCO that runs it, and the OLG. That incensed me a little bit, because we were getting that the old two-step, right? Nothing gets resolved when that occurs. And then we went into We inquired from the WSIB and the Ministry of Labor about some things and found some interesting data that suggested that security guards were being assaulted on a fairly regular basis. And it's certainly dramatic escalation from 2020. So, here we are today trying to do what's right for the guards. I don't think anybody has sort of listened to the guards.
No.
People have dismissed what their opinions are because they're service-oriented people. So they're there to serve.
If I can step in before you get too far into that point of
yep.
view, but you said something about the stats weren't there or they weren't really being looked at. And I just wanted to highlight for myself, and we've obviously had these discussions, but I found it shocking that when I tried to do some research into guard rate, injury rates or death rates, it's almost impossible. Like you get streams and streams of, hey, police stats all over the place, but
yeah.
Nothing on private security. And fortunately, I think it was, you put me onto the college professor there out of Montreal or Ottawa, I can't remember
yeah.
which university.
University of Ottawa.
And the only study that I've been able to find so far that specifically studied the rate of incidents with guards. And I think, you didn't say it, but I think it's important to highlight that what he found was a rate that's higher than the police. And when you
Correct.
Think about the fact that they really are the first responders are the guards, it really does make sense that they are the highest risk. They don't have the bat tools, right? They don't have the bat belt that the police do.
And I just want to follow up on that with the reporting. I guess the only reporting mechanism I suspect is WSIB, and you only report if it's a serious injury. If a guard got shoved or punched in the nose, chances are there's no WSIB report going in. But my question to you is with WSIB, is there a category called security guards, or do they lump them in with construction workers?
So there's a nomenclature that the WSIB follows. I can't remember what the nomenclature is, but I believe they're categorized under a section called 911, which is emergency, workers. And I could find out. I could look and get back to you on in relation to the nomenclature. But I think that's right. And the Ministry of Labor keeps their own records as well. It's like they operate as silos. The Ministry of the Solicitor General operates as one silo. The Ministry of Labor operates as another. And WSIB, that is sort of a pseudo arm, operates as a third silo. And they don't often communicate, or they don't communicate well from where I'm standing, because if they did, you would see more of an alignment towards mitigation strategies, and you don't see that. You see just a simple escalation of violent interactions and them keeping score related to money, how much money they pay out. There's certainly not an element, as far as I'm concerned, related to mitigation, and that's a problem. Every one of these incidences, be it a minor incident or a major incident, which would be classified as a fatality, is a teachable moment, is a learnable moment. And we lose it when it gets boiled down to the bare facts, and nobody looks any deeper into it. I've done FOIs for the Ruffalo murder in Guelph. That FOI that was returned to me is a two-pager. That was a fatality. He was on site at 8 o'clock. He was there for a 4-hour shift. By 2040, he was deceased. He had zero training. He had no business being on that site to do this work. And that turned into a two-page report, one from the company, a report from the company that was inaccurate, and this computer-based fill-in-the-blanks report that really didn't provide any other information, relative to the event. I mean, there's no causation other than he got beat up, or he was, in the reports. It was called attached, which I think they meant attacked. I quickly got a phone call from somebody who used to work there, and they had approached the organization Metrolinx to say, we're no longer doing this. This is too dangerous for our guys. They pulled their services. Metrolinx said, we will have their constables in to do it. And then from what I understand, a rail organization called in for the coverage, and it's still reported even to the Ministry of Labor that it was Metrolinx that hired them. I mean, these are just flagrant issues that need to be addressed. And Mr. Ruffalo's death was a teachable moment. You do not put somebody, and this isn't ageism at all, but somebody who was at a geriatric level, I think Mr. Ruffalo was about 70 years of age, you do not put him into a dynamic intervention applicable place and hope that he's okay.
Sorry, Luco.
No, Brian, I was just going to turn it over to you because you have a very, I mean, you're always referencing that 80-year-old security guard at the front desk of a business and walking in there and saying, you know, can they really do what they're supposed to be doing? And it's just indicative of a business that it's just a veil, right? It's just a facade. We're not really doing security out there. We're really just concierges at the end of
But
the
you
day.
know, I sort of call it, and I was going to go somewhere else, but I call that the illusion of security. And the problem is, if you give this example, Paul, this tragic example that you just talked about, we put a person in a situation, okay? We don't ask ourselves, what is it that we want security officer to do? Because if we start off by saying, why do we have security at this facility? And if we say it's because there are bad guys there that are doing such and such, then that will dictate the kind of security and training we have. But we don't
Sure.
do that. And that's really, people get hurt as a result. But the question I was going to ask Paul is, it's really disconcerting for me to hear, and I've been learning this from you, following you on LinkedIn, that there's no record keeping. So as bad as we think the situation is, it might even be a lot worse. There's nothing compelling anyone to report. Like, I interviewed a guard at a client site that said he was beaten up and he had a black eye and everything. And he showed me the remnants. And I said, well, what did you do? And he said, I said, did you tell the client? He says, no, I told my employer. What did my employer do? Nothing. So, you know, there's good companies and bad companies and everything in between. But there is no mechanism, is there, obliging someone to do something? A guard, who does the guard go to?
So the mechanism is the reporting structure through the WSIB. There is a report. There are things, reportable injuries that are mandated. They have to be reported. So guard A, who has a bloody lip or a bloody nose or whatnot, goes to his supervisor. The supervisor then is supposed to escalate this into either the operations management component or HR, and then HR is supposed to do something. From that perspective, there's a form, I think it's a form 7 or a form 9, I can't remember what it's called, or a form 1 even. I think it's a form 1 actually, through WSIB. That's one element. If there is a fatality, a major incident as to, you know, we get to make the determination as to what a major incident is. I mean, I guess a death is a major incident.
I would hope so.
I would hope so, right? We then have to make notification to the Ministry of Labor. But the Ministry of Labor is also notified through through the police agencies, and then is supposed to you know, hold the scene, you know, conduct an investigation. There is elements within the Ministry of Labor, which I have pushed out to everybody, and hopefully people become educated on this, but there are things that have to happen from a ministry perspective. They're not happening. I mean, them asking for a scene to be held, and then the organization that hired Mr. Ruffalo says, yeah, there is no scene. You know, the police came, they took the guard away, and they left. They arrested the bad guy who was on site, saying that, you know, Mr. Ruffalo was the devil. So I think job's done. That's what the police think. Job's done. There are teachable moments in these things that
But
all need to be extrapolated and, you know, pulled apart and looked at, and for us to learn, us as an industry to learn. And we don't have the, not even the modicum of organization related to that kind of stuff.
is
So
that, sorry, Paul,
No, go ahead.
But is that what you're saying? And I don't disagree with it, so I'm not going to waste time on going into it again. But is that indicative of the way the ministry treats our industry, or is it indicative of a greater problem with the bureaucracy in general? Because if it's just the industry, we have a problem, a bigger problem, I would suggest, because we're not as important as any other private entity or business. But if it's a problem with the government, then it's a bigger issue as well, right?
Yeah, that's a fair question. The answer is I don't know. The more and more that I do FOIs and I learn more about, what it is systemically, then I can I can speak intelligently about that. But from the last two fatalities, I can tell you that the Ministry of Labor did no investigations at either site. The family from Mr. Ferdinand weren't notified by the ministry that there was no investigation. So they missed their minimum standards of sitting down and talking to this family and what. Nobody from the Ministry of Labor reached out to these people.
Even if they did the investigation, is the focus of the investigation is what? Is it criminal to see what safety issue happened? What is the focus? And once they have the finding, do they share it with the regulator of security guards so that they can look at legislation and see if we've got to make changes?
I mean, I guess the answer is twofold. The investigation could be criminal in nature, but it's more along the lines of looking at, in my mind, more along the lines of looking at what contributed to this fatality, what could we do differently as it relates to these types of fatalities, and from a mitigation standpoint. Simple questions like, should that person have even been there? I mean, that to your point, Brian, related to that 80-year-old concierge, Mario Ruffolo, in my humble opinion, should not have even been on that site. He certainly wasn't trained for that site under use of force. And even if he was trained under that use of force, like the likelihood that he would have been able to apply that force in an effective manner is negligible. You then have learnings from that. It doesn't have to be always criminal, but from a labor perspective, it doesn't have to go that way. But from an education perspective, and to learn why we're doing that, why these things are happening, that is paramount.
So you really explained it and put in context for me. So assuming you were the investigator for the Ministry of Labor and you've come out with the findings you came out with, does that go to the regulator, the registrar? Like,
So it
does that
doesn't
go?
necessarily go to the registrar. The registrar does occasionally reach into the Ministry of Labor, from what I understand, to get information. That information is not really forthcoming. There's some type of impediment that happens between these ministries related to sharing of information, and I don't know why that is, right? You've seen the ministry's report come out as it relates to enforcement actions and licensing and how many people have been licensed and what a great job they're doing from a ministerial point of view, but it doesn't get into the hard facts as to how many guards have been injured, what are the those types of things where you would want, I would think, on a report to understand what hardships the industry or what hardships your subjects, for the lack of a better term, are facing. And there's none of that. It's absent.
I mean, when I think about it, maybe I'm going to light a fire I don't want to fight. I don't want to light. But when I think about it, why is there no push towards charging certain people with negligence? Because I'll tell you, we're looking right now. The police are going to move in at some point on the encampment in Toronto, right, to get rid of the protesters. I don't think any of those public order people are going to be under 60. Right? So why is it okay to put an 80-year-old in basically the same situation? Because they're expected to remove somebody that you don't want there without the training, without the protections. So I don't understand why that hasn't come out more in on the legal side, on the civil side of things, saying, hey, you know what?
So
You should have given him that training. You should have given him the body armor.
here's my thoughts on it, because I've thought about this quite a bit. Why aren't we being investigated? From a non-compliance perspective. And yeah, I'm probably not going to be popular, you know, in my industry for saying this, but there are organizations out there that just aren't doing what they should be doing. And you know, that is, you know, emblematic of a larger issue related to how it is the industry is regulated and, you know, and, you know, the rules being enforced. But then you come into, so what do? We have legislation that tells you, you can be charged criminally. A director can be charged criminally for, you know, actions that relate to death, for people that are under your control. Okay, so if somebody is shot during a robbery or during some sort of violent altercation, what are the mitigation strategies that the ministry can then order to the industry? It's very limited, Luch. It's very limited. They're not going to say everybody is going to be issued with sidearms effective tomorrow.
No,
that's not going to happen.
They're not. No, but they are. But you can't take what is considered reasonable steps. And when you expect someone to engage somebody who could
right.
be armed with a knife, it's reasonable to expect they have body armor. It's reasonable to expect that they have training. Right.
And Paul, I just want to add to that. You know, when I worked in the commercial real estate sphere, I was amazed that if a guy went up to clean a window and he didn't have his fall arrest stuff on, the property management company or the building owner was all over it because they didn't want to get charged if the guy got hurt.
Yeah.
So I really think, you know, a lot more has to be done by government to these companies that are putting guards into these types of situations.
I think it goes back. And before I ask the question, we're going to go to this quick break by my sponsor because he pays the big bucks. That's why I have this wonderful studio.
Hey folks, if you're concerned about the security of your business, look no further than Brian Clayman & Associates. With its stable of experienced advisors and certified professionals, Brian Clayman & Associates provides tailored security solutions to help protect what matters most to you. Don't wait until disaster strikes. Give Brian Clayman & Associates a call today and take the first step towards a more secure future. When it comes to security, trust the experts. And now, back to the podcast.
Okay. That's fantastic.
All right. Now, back to the show. Before I forget my thought, this, I think, hits it on the head. You said it earlier when we were preparing for this session, Paul, when you were talking with Brian, you said, no one gives a shit about the guards. And to me, that's the crux of the situation. The client doesn't give a shit. That's why they don't give them that $400 piece of body armor. The contractor doesn't mandate it. The contractor doesn't care because he saves $400.
Well, if you think about it in this respect, so you have an organization that runs casinos. They're a Crown Corporation. So they have statutory immunity. Any organization that works under them from a contract perspective has statutory immunity. So what's the purpose? Well, what's the reason why you would protect anybody? Because it just drives costs up, and there is zero risk of you being charged. With an
no
offense.
No accountability.
There's no accountability whatsoever, and guards don't know that. Guards at casinos don't know that. Guards working for Crown corporations across this country don't know that.
I'm naive. I'm going to ask a question. I think you're going to give me an honest answer, and you're probably piss people off because I think I know the answer you're going to give. But where are the unions in this? Like, who's talking for the guards? I mean, are we hoping that the employers are going to talk for the guards? And most of them do. Many of them do. But where are the unions?
So, I mean, the honest answer to this is they're absent. They're not talking. And I don't know why they're not talking. Now, I don't have any view into whether they're lobbying or whatnot, but I can tell you that we have started the activity of lobbying, and I have been told by the federal government to go away. It has nothing to do with them. The provincial government, I really haven't got any response from yet, but I assume that they're going to say the same thing. This is a bit of a hot potato. The unions did not like the SGAO at its inception. They basically called it, another form of a union. I have always said that, people have the right to representation. I have no interest in forming a collective agreement or bargaining on behalf of an individual. what the SGAO is there to do is to try to keep the ministries accountable, try to keep the legislation that makes sense, understand that the guards are really the engine, the economic engine of any organization that employs them. So they should really be the most important element of all this. And it's always stunning to me that they are the last to be considered. Yeah. It's stunning. I started in this industry 36 years ago. I started as a security guard. I went into loss prevention. I've done executive close protection, private investigation, consulting. I was the client at one point in time. I've worked at banks. I've, you know, done investigations. I've done a lot, and nothing has changed as it relates to the landscape for guards. Nothing.
And you know what's so sad, and I see it all the time when I'm in a client site and I'm evaluating a program, the demographic of the typical guard in Canada right now, because it's such a poorly paid industry, is typically new Canadians. People just trying to support their families and make a living, okay? They don't really understand the real estate. So they're trusting their employer. They're trusting the client. They're trusting government to take care of them. And they've been completely abandoned.
They really have. There is a sense of, at least the view that I have, is blind ignorance, yeah. Right? What people really don't know or aren't going to ask won't hurt them. Your clients, the clients that you typically deal with, you know, would be of the same ilk. New Canadians, they're here to, you know, begin a new life, to look for prosperity, to raise a family, they're not here to get punched, spit on, kicked, shot at, stabbed, treated like subhumans. Mm-hmm. Because everybody, at the end of the day, if you have a heart attack in the middle of downtown Toronto or anywhere else in Canada, the first person that you're going to see is the security guard. And you better hope that they're trained to help your ass out. Mm-hmm. Because if they're not, you're going to the light. It's just that simple.
Yeah. I'm not sure, you might be right. Are you sure they're the first? The Toronto police are going to be there in 26
minutes. He just had to. He can't help
it. Yeah, I know. Listen, Brian, speaking on that, we had an episode where we arrested somebody for a simple trespass and an assault, simple assault, level one assault, was being a bit of a knucklehead, in custody for 9 hours.
Believe it. Incredible.
Wow. I think he's entitled to benefits.
Right violations.
Holy moly, man.
We talked about that before. We could talk about that.
Yeah. We're not getting off topic.
I just got to say, you're damned if you do and damned if you don't. You know, if the police aren't coming, then it's incumbent on the operators of the buildings and the venues to protect themselves. And it's the security guards now that become the de facto police. Not because they want to, because they have to. And I arrest and you hold for 9 hours and you open up that Pandora's box, or you let them break the window and do nothing. I mean, it's a ridiculous situation that we find.
It really is. And people, you know, a lot of the industry doesn't want to see it. They want to cast a blind eye to it. And, you know, there are people within the industry that, you know, see that this is a real problem. And then there are others that don't want to even deal with it. I had somebody at a meeting that I attended, who's a long-term member of the security industry, who told me that, you know, he really loved my passion, but he didn't like my approach. And I'm like, my approach? Like, nobody's doing anything. My approach is what? My approach is what it is. Every fight that I've ever had, I led with my face. Right? So
it shows.
It is what it is.
Listen, though, you know, I think that's a good thing. I think it's time for a bull in a china shop type thing. I think what we got to do is occupy the University of Toronto and get some demands that have to be heard.
Well, listen, work Brian, for them. Brian, listen, I am not ruling out that kind of thing from happening. That's civil disobedience by security guards. I'm not ruling that out. If we could park 10,000 security guards at Queen's Park and empty Toronto for a day, mm-hmm. I think everybody'd be relatively worried about what else.
I think you're entirely right. I'm not advocating that, but I told Luciano in the past, I said, you know, maybe the strategy that you guys have to take, the association has to take, is being the nice guy, being the shrinking violet hasn't worked. Maybe we got to look at the activist community. You know, there's a lesson to be learned by what's happening at universities right now. It freaking works. They're demanding that you talk, and the University of Toronto is going to talk.
Yeah. I've sent out letters to every politician in Ontario. I've sent out, I believe they're professional letters, stating what the issues are. I've heard crickets. I've heard crickets. The Ministry of Private Security and Investigative Services, I have to say, has been great. I really do, because I believe Catherine, who is the registrar, actually cares about the plight of these guards. But, you know, she's one person in a huge ministry and can only accomplish things as she's allowed to accomplish them. So, you know, Catherine is not the issue. The branch of the ministry is not the issue. The issue is that nobody else wants to listen and or do anything. You know, I'm passionate about this. I think that this is something that needs to be fixed. It needs to be fixed now, not 3 years from now, because we all get into this subterfuge of meeting after meeting after meeting after meeting, and nothing occurs. And then suddenly it's 3 years down the pipe.
Yeah. So what does success look like, Paul? Because I want to keep an eye on the time. But what for you, what is the objective of the SGAO? What are you looking for? What would make you happy?
Yeah. So I think, you know, one of the first objectives has already been met, and that's that the new registry that's come out by the ministry to allow us to check on guards' licenses, both from a naming convention perspective and from a numeric perspective. So we can check to see if these guards actually have licenses, or they're created through guard puppy mills, because that's another issue. I think a secondary thing is to clean up the legislation within the Private Investigator and Security Guards Act. And by cleaning up, I mean being accountable to the industry related to the regulations. So standardized regulations and around use of force, we have none.
Yeah.
A categorization of security guards, we have none. It would be very simple for Mario Ruffalo if he was categorized as a category 3 guard, and knowing that site is now categorized as a category 5 guard, Mario wouldn't have been part of the conversation. And that's what we need to get to, because this ambiguity that exists within our industry and the greater regulatory industry is not sustainable. The other component of it is I would like to see a criminal code violation for assault security in uniform.
I agree.
I think that that's important. I think there needs to be a distinction between, you know, you acting as a security guard and being the general public, because everybody sort of thinks, oh, you're just a rent-a-cop, and you're there has to be repercussions related to laying your hands on a security guard. And I have always advocated for, if somebody touches one of my guards, they're being charged. I don't care what the police say. If I have to bring charges down to the justice of the peace and lay them myself, the police officer that attended that site or that call can then explain to the Crown Attorney why there wasn't a charge laid. Because I find far too often that the police are interfering with that process and saying, guys, there's nothing going to happen to him. Just let him go. We'll give him a trespass notice. He'll be gone. Well, he's not gone. He's back 3 hours later, and he's mad.
Well said, Paul. I can't tell you how many times I've had guards that would deal with a trespasser, get a black eye, the police come. Guy's not charged with assault. They give him a trespass ticket, walk him out. Just ridiculous that the bad guys in the street people, they know that. There's no respect for the guards, nor consequence.
And what it does to the guard, I had a guard who recently was like a number of near serious slashes to his vest. Thankfully, he had body armor that protected him from serious injury. And the police show up and basically, to your point, downplay it. If it had been an officer, the guy would have probably been shot. But
Sure.
as the guard is retelling it to me, you could see it in his face that, you know, I'm worthless. They did nothing for me. I felt like he felt like the being re-victimized, right? Calling the police for
Correct.
Help and then being told that it's nothing. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Okay, I think that's a great place to leave it on a very high note, in the sense that we're very passionate about it. It's definitely clear in our conversation. But Paul, before we sign off, where can someone, certainly guards, I mean, clearly you're not aiming to become a union. You're there to vote, to be a voice for the guards, to give the guards a voice in the public realm, because there is no voice for them. There's been an absence of that voice. So where can they find you? Where can they, you know, learn more about the SJO?
So we're on LinkedIn under the Security Guards Association of Ontario. Our website is becoming live very shortly. We had a cyber attack on our website shortly after launch. We can only surmise as to why that occurred. And then so we're being very vigilant, sorry, as it relates to this next iteration of website. So the website, the address would be www.sgao.ca. That will be coming online shortly. And then you can follow us on LinkedIn as well. Also, we have an Instagram site put up, SGAO23, and probably shortly WhatsApp and whatnot. So there'll be no shortage of getting a hold of us. We're findable.
Well, I hope that our listeners spread the word. I think guards need to stand up. I would love to see 130, 140,000 of them march on Queen's Park. I think it would be a sight to
behold.
So would I. It would be fantastic. But it's only through people like yourself that's ever going to be achievable. Whether they like you or not, to your point, some people have issues with it. You need to rattle some trees sometimes, and you're just the guy to do that. So thank you for doing that. Happy to have had you as a guest on our show today, and hopefully we can get you on again as things progress. But for me, I'm going to sign off, turn it over to Brian to say goodbye, and then some final words, Paul. That's it. I'm done.
Before I say goodbye and thank you, I just got to ask, SGAO 23, you mean you got 22 other people in SGAO? Wow, that's weird.
No, it was started in 23.
Oh, 23.
Oh, thank God.
Because yeah. Okay.
You know what, Brian? I gave him shit for that. For that acronym, it just is so...
he hates it.
I hate it. There's so many other ways you could have said it nicer. And I thought the same thing. 22 other people actually use the same damn acronym? No way.
Okay, good to know. Actually, it makes sense though. Oh, I've known you a long time. One thing I know, and you and I have gone at it. We're both passionate guys. I really, yep. really respect what you're doing. And you got my support. I think it's great. And best of luck with the organization.
Thanks, Brian. Listen, Brian, I have no issues at all with what you say or how you say it, because I think that more clients need to hear about what the duty of care is, because that just furthers what the SGAO's positioning mm-hmm. will be, right?
Yep,
so,
yep.
You know, sometimes we're like Wildy Coyote and the sheepdog. We beat the snot out of each other for 8 hours and we'll go and have a beer after and laugh.
Exactly. That makes life interesting. I love
it does.
That.
It absolutely does, buddy. I mean, I would love... Brian, for you at some point in time to chair one of our committees about whatever it is. And because I know that you'll run it to ground. I would like everybody in this industry to look at the SJAO as the voice for them, because mm-hmm. I can guarantee you guys have known me for a long time. I am not leaving this issue alone. I am going to be attacking it at all sides, all angles, in every way, because there needs to be change. It's just that simple.
Well, listen, I will tell you just in closing, I've got your back in a sense that we may not agree with everything, but when I'm in front of a client, I tell them their program is only as good as the guards they employ, and you got to treat these people right. And part of treating them right is not only respecting them, but paying them properly. And I'm a big
Absolutely.
Advocate that you get what you pay for.
Yeah.
And if you're not happy with security, it's not the guard. Look in the mirror.
You're absolutely right. Pay equity is a big thing, right? And we're bringing that up more and more and more and more. Pay equity, pay equity, pay equity. Because these guards are getting paid $2 more, minimum wage plus $2. And look at everything that they do. Everything that they do.
I hear you.
Let's leave that for another podcast.
Sure.
All right. Okay,
all right,
folks,
guys.
That's a wrap. Until next time, take care.